listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. Just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch. On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Welcome, everybody. As always, we've got a great show for you today. Today's show is challenging you to think about things. Possibly rethink what you learned in your classes on evolution, huh? Also, today's class will possibly make you consider a more spiritual than religious take on our evolution as human beings. My special guest today is Steve McIntosh, and he's a leader in the integral philosophy movement. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about that and what that's about, so you'll get it. He's also a founding partner of the think tank, the New Social Policy Foundation. He's also in the Institute for Cultural Evolution. Steve is also practicing law. He has been practicing law, and he's an advisor with one of America's largest firms and companies. Author of his latest book, we'll talk about his last book as well briefly, which touches on some of the points in his latest book. It's called Evolution's Purpose, an integral interpretation of the scientific story of our origins. Welcome, Steve, to the program. So nice to have you here today.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Oh, please call me Michelle. It's so nice to have you.
All right.
That's great. Okay. You know, this book was a great read. I really enjoyed it because it made me really rethink a lot of things that I learned about evolution. you and I briefly chatted. I believe also in the power of the consciousness of the human being and the evolution of the human being and how we have evolved and our brains have evolved in order to, of course, cope with the world, excuse me, in order to, you know, be here as we are now in this existence. So the book is wonderful. You're a philosopher. So I really enjoy that philosophical argument.
Well, philosophy is being reclaimed in a way that it's being becoming socially relevant again to everyday people because we can use it to really see how we can improve the world in unprecedented ways. As I argue in the book, a deeper understanding of evolution can lead directly to a more evolved world.
Right. And you talk about deeper understanding, and we'll get into that deeper understanding. Let's just jump right into the most important question. And then we'll elaborate on that as time goes by. What is evolution's purpose? Turn your radio up, everybody. This is it. This is the answer. Here you go.
As I carefully argue in the book, throughout the book, evolution's purpose is to grow toward ever-widening realizations of the beautiful, the true, and the good. That is, intrinsic value. You know, the most valuable thing in the universe are these ways that we make the world a better place. And evolution's purpose is to bring those values into the universe, both externally in our world and internally in our minds.
That's, I love it. Now, those are more, you know, spiritual, or as we may say, I don't like to use the word metaphysical, but you know what I'm saying. They are more spiritually used concepts in keeping with perfection, in keeping with a, shall we say, higher power. You know, so part
The beautiful.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, you go.
The beautiful, the true, and the good. This triad of values that's been recognized by sages and saints and philosophers for the last 2,000 years or more are really ways to talk about spirit without attaching this description to a particular belief system, right? In other words, truth and goodness is something that everyone experiences, even though we may have different or even conflicting understandings of what is true or good or beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
These values are alive in everyone's life, and the more we can bring them alive, the more we can understand them, the more effective we'll be at making our lives more beautiful, true, and good.
Wow, I love that. The science of evolution, what we learn in school, what we probably still continue to learn, it doesn't really get to the understanding of why we have consciousness and why we have free will in our lives. I'm not buying a lot of that. We are not meaningless accidents, in other words. Can you elaborate
right.
a little bit more on why don't these traditional philosophies adequately explain the fullness of evolution?
Well, I'll say first that I'm a great respecter and supporter of science. You
right.
know, what
sure.
mainstream science has delivered, that sort of solid truth of science, is really what the philosophy in my book's based on.
Right.
Although I don't advocate unscientific theories such as
right.
intelligent design, or I'm trying to build on what science has
right.
brought, I'm also pointing out that evolution as the creation story of our age is really, it's much more than a scientific theory.
Mm.
It impacts our view of who we are and how we think about ourselves in the world, and it's culturally important on many levels. So it's really important to recognize that the philosophy of materialism, you know, mm-hmm. scientific naturalism, out of which much of the science that we have for evolution that was born out of the Victorian age,
right.
that philosophy, that materialistic philosophy, did good. It
yes.
helped to liberate science from
yes.
The state-sponsored belief system of the traditional worldview of the time.
Right.
But now we can begin to see that materialistic view, the fact
mm-hmm.
that it's simply matter and motion, and everything has to be explained in terms of physics,
mm-hmm.
that now is providing a kind of theoretical handcuffs that's
mm-hmm.
preventing us from seeing the larger meanings and values that evolution has produced, and allow, you know, it's keeping us from really making the world a more evolved place, because we're not seeing evolution as clearly as it can be seen if we
wow.
have a more liberating philosophy.
Wow, is that true?
I mean,
go on. No, I'm here.
All right. The philosophy that we're advocating really helps us understand that evolution is a prolific generator of value,
mm.
right? It's like, could you possibly understand Yosemite if you couldn't see its beauty, if
right.
you couldn't see how valuable it is in terms
right.
of just being, you know, a gem of the world and,
right.
and in terms of its value?
Sure.
Well, the same thing goes for the scientific story of our origins.
Mm-hmm.
Evolution has been building on itself, creating value in a rising flow of creativity that's been going on for 13 billion years.
Yeah.
And when we come to the insight that we can see, we can feel evolution happening within us, you know, that to be human is to know what it feels like to
right.
be evolution happening,
yeah.
then we can begin to sort of understand the direction of value, the progress
mm-hmm.
that evolution has made, and that kind of can really clarify how we can make further progress now.
Mm. Boy, that's fascinating stuff. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle here on LA Talk Radio. And my special guest is Steve McIntosh. He's author of the book Evolution's Purpose. It's an integral interpretation of the scientific story of our origins. It's sort of a philosophical book, actually, and he's not ignoring scientific fact and information, but also incorporating some spirituality, you know, for lack of a better word, into it, because of where we're at in our consciousness as human beings right now, and hopefully, where we're going. Steve, can you describe the new picture of evolution that's come about from the physical and social sciences in the last, it's just like several decades, not too long ago, actually, huh?
Sure. You know, for many years, evolution was thought to simply describe the descent with modification of species as discovered by Darwin. And that's certainly a core element of our understanding of evolution is natural selection and how we've come here as biological beings.
Yes.
But really, since the 60s, we've begun to see that evolution is more than just biological development. It's also a universal process of becoming that's
mm-hmm.
been going on since the beginning of time and space, right, 13
yeah.
billion years ago. That is, there's three great domains of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
There's the evolution of matter, right?
It
begins with the Big Bang and it results in the stars and the planets that create an environment that can support before life.
Right.
Then there's a kind of a second big bang, if you will, the emergence of life. It's a whole new category of evolution involving new laws of physics, if you will, because of the intentionality of life. It's something new that emerges in the universe. Then with the emergence of humanity, again, as I carefully argue in the book, there's a kind of a third big bang, where in a third domain, a new kind of evolution occurs, which is the evolution of culture and consciousness that's resulted in our global civilization.
Wow, that is so true. I agree with you. So you talk about, you know, changes we've made and modernism. I mean, amazing progress. Amazing, especially today, now, what's going on. But they've created a lot of problems, too, in our world of humanity. What can you talk about some of those problems?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's important when we understand the evolution of consciousness and culture, human history, as an authentic form of evolution. It can't be conflated with biological evolution, but it's real evolution nonetheless. We can see that it has a structural pattern of emergence where something more keeps coming from something less, like the rest of the evolutionary trajectory. And we begin to see significant emergences in culture create new worldviews, right? In other words, from the beginning, humans have been trying to improve their conditions.
Sure.
But the most dramatic forms of improvement occur when humans, they redefine improvement itself, right? When they create a new set of values. And that's what the emergence of modernism, as we call it, during the Enlightenment, right? The scientific rational worldview defined new types of truth with scientific reason and new types of goodness with democratic forms of government. Mm. These were major advances in terms of the improvement of the human condition.
Sure.
But in this structure of evolution, we see a pattern also wherein every new set of improvements brings a new set of problems that are directly tied to those improvements.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's known in philosophical jargon as the dialectic of progress and pathology.
Oh boy.
So modernism, you know, the developed world that we live in and enjoy has brought more cultural evolution than any worldview before or since.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also brought environmental degradation, nuclear proliferation,
and absolutely.
You know, gross inequality across
the
world. There's many pathologies, and so the natural tendency of some progressive people is to reject modernism, and just to say we have to go back to a localized, more sustainable form of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And while some of that's true, there's another part of it that there is no going back, and
that's
our duty is to improve modernism without trying to vanquish it as a culture.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it has to happen. It has to be, you know, coming along. Coming up in just a bit, I also want to ask you about your feelings with the Mayan calendar end date of December 21st, 2012. Maybe what that was about in relationship to our evolution as human beings, or is it just a manufactured date by civilization who, you know, had some information and crude calendars? So, by the way, you are listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is Dr. Michelle, and you're on the couch with me. We're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsor. And, of course, I'm proud to welcome my new sponsor on LA Talk Radio. This is Dr. Michelle, and I'm proud to welcome my new sponsor, eSocialCalendar.com, because they're the company who brings online dating to reality by taking the pressure out of your first date, as well as the mystery out of online dating, by meeting that special someone in an enjoyable and comfortable group setting. Don't miss the opportunity to meet and mingle at eSocialCalendar.com's upcoming Singles Spooktacular Halloween Party, happening on Saturday, October 27th at the Newport Beach Marriott at 900 Newport Center Drive. Doors open at 7 p.m. Let eSocialCalendar.com help you find that special someone and have a spooktacular time. Register now at eSocialCalendar.com. Check out their website. Back here on the couch with Dr. Michelle here on LA Talk Radio and my special guest today, Steve McIntosh, author of Evolution's Purpose. I just kind of thought I'd throw this out to you. I don't know, Steve, but it's, you know, a lot of scholars and contemporary writers are speculating on what the Mayan calendar end date of December 21st, 2012 coming up, or the beginning of whatever changes actually means. And, you know, there's all these diverse theories ranging from the end of the world to the initiation of 1,000 years of peace. How do you attach this information to your theory of evolution?
Well, that's an interesting and important question. I think a lot of people in the culture are magnetized towards some of the fantastic predictions that are coming out of progressive spirituality primarily, within progressive culture in general, the date of December 21st, 2012, based on the Mayan calendar, but as championed by many other progressive luminaries. There's what we might understand as a Jungian archetype in the cultural consciousness that looks for dates to fixate on around emergence, right? If we can focus on a date and believe in the emergence of a significant emergence will occur at that date.
Right.
I mean, the better thinkers in this area aren't predicting an apocalypse, right? They're hoping to use this focus as a way to get people to think about an emergence. Like, just by thinking about it, we can create it. And I think that's partially true.
Exactly.
But I also believe that there's a certain amount of magical thinking associated with the hopes of 2012.
Yes.
And from one of the goals of integral philosophy is to try to build bridges back to the mainstream instead of just being satisfied with being with progressive spirituality being countercultural, thinking that we're awake and we're conscious and they're unawake, or unconscious.
Right.
We actually want to create a philosophy that's credible to science and credible to the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And, in January of 2013, when nothing miraculous has occurred, progressive spirituality is going to have a bit of egg on its face, I hate to say, right?
So
those of us who are in the integral worldview sort of reject 2012 as a little bit too magical and as too predictable in terms of it being just another recurrence of this same archetype, which we see, 1984, the year 2000. As soon as 2012 is gone, there'll be another date projected into the future that'll be another reappearance of this sort of indestructible archetype.
Exactly.
And you can see it not only in progressive culture, you can see it in traditional culture as well, with the recent billboards about the rapture that we all made fun of, right? That was like shooting fish in the barrel.
That's right.
Making fun of that.
Right.
But making fun of 2012, I don't want to do it because there's a lot of good people of good sense and good faith who I admire who are magnetized towards that. I just want to be more realistic. I think that our duty to help make the world a better place and create evolution, we can no longer rely on magical thinking. We have to get
there
more serious about it and not expect the world's just going to wake up and realize that we're all one people overnight, because that's not the way evolution works.
That's right. Good answer. I agree with you, Steve. And like you said, too, there's been so many so-called predictions and about the shift of the ages coming on. It's throughout history, and I guess you might say throughout our evolution as human beings. And in one sense, if we can get a community mindset around the world of good changes are happening, we will think, and therefore they will possibly, hopefully.
Yeah. So again, there's a good side and a downside, and it's important not to be pulled into either one of those poles when we're looking at cultural phenomenon like that.
Yeah, that's for sure. So everybody, calm down and don't worry about it. You don't have to go down to your underground bunkers and get your water and food supply. It's
Yeah, unlikely.
Yeah. What did you do at the turn of the century? What did you do? Were you all ready to, blow up your computer and worrying that the electricity was
No, we had
shut
a big
off?
Party at my
That's
house,
right.
and
there you
a
go.
Lot of people came, and we all had a great time and celebrated the turning of the millennium.
That's what we did, too. There you go. So, in your book, you also say that the purpose of evolution is not intelligently designed or externally controlled. Now, you're going to have a lot of flack from some of these strong fundamental religions. How are they going to sort of grasp your theory? Where do you come in the middle to explain to them?
Well, there's no arguing with fundamentalists, whether they're traditional fundamentalists who are, coming from a religious perspective or modernist fundamentalists who are coming from a kind of a spiritual, anti-spiritual, materialistic, atheistic perspective, which insists that there's nothing to the universe but matter in motion.
Right.
There's no argument, right, that can dislodge someone whose identity is formed around a fundamentalist position. So it's okay. I mean,
it's
just a factor of the landscape of our culture, but I think there are many people, the people who claim to be spiritual but not religious, in the culture they see on offer either mythic spirituality, which would be a regression to a religious worldview, or they see the more immature aspects of progressive spirituality, what we used to call the New Age, and that's not attractive either.
Right.
So an understanding of what science itself is revealing about the spirituality of the universe, the way that evolution does generate value, and the way we can feel it within ourselves, these new philosophical truths about evolution have the opportunity to provide a kind of spiritual leadership for the society, because it's spirituality that can incorporate all forms of spirituality without being stuck in just polite spiritual pluralism where anything goes.
Yeah,
we can
begin
to reclaim a kind of a standard of truth that's not absolutistic, but that is also based on science and based on you know, the reality that we can actually see and feel.
Wow, is that true? That is so true. And, you know, what's really cool, too, is that with the emergence of so much more information that we're getting in physics, it is science. It's in the unseen. But, you know, there are multiple possibilities, string theory, parallel universes, all that kind of thing. I mean, these are speculative things, but I think, you know, in physics we're seeing a huge growth of information that sort of can add, you know, to there are things in the unseen that we are learning about. So it's not necessarily unspiritual, but you know, there's not, you know, this is not hardcore science that again, you know, the Big Bang theory was an unintelligent force. It's just, this is the way it is. We're learning things that are amazing that will unfold and possibly connect physics with a so-called spiritual reality.
Sure. Ever since the 70s, one of my main focuses in life has been to try to discern the deeper meanings revealed by scientific discoveries and facts, right?
Cool.
Beginning with the, you know, quantum physics and physics, of course, is a very sexy field because it does have a lot of implications for the larger truths of the universe.
True.
But in my travels, in my philosophical career, I've really come to see that the form of scientific truth that is most potent for spiritual understanding is evolution itself, the science and evolution, because it is something that we embody. It's not something that's far off. It's not something we need a microscope to understand.
Right.
We can feel it within us. We can, you know, we embody it, right? We, you know, our bodies are made of water, which is mostly hydrogen, which is sort of the beginning, the debris of the Big Bang.
Oh, yeah.
And every emergence since the Big Bang has we embody within us, including the emergences of culture that we're using right now within our minds to have this conversation.
Yep.
So the fact that it's all here, you know, we carry our origins in our being as an ever-present part of who we are. This gives us a way to understand evolution, you know, with new clarity, and to see the spiritual message of it, which is how it generates value, how it keeps producing, you know, more beauty, and then through us, more truth and goodness. In other words, when we awake to our role as agents of evolution, we can see how, you know, that this purpose that I'm talking about isn't necessarily externally controlled. It's not deterministic. It's open-ended, because we have freedom to decide what's relatively more perfect, right?
Yes.
We're enlisted as humans in the task of furthering the leading edge of evolution by making our world a more sustainable, loving, you know, a place that's more beautiful, true, and good. And although we have still a long way to go, and that every time we create something new, we get a new set of problems that requires we evolve further, we can still come to see it as a natural process, and that things like values, things like beauty, truth, and goodness are not just merely subjective. They're not objective either. We need a sophisticated philosophy to understand what value is. But when we do discover, you know, the real nature of value and how it works in the universe, how it is a real thing, this can kind of give us a comforting spiritual message about our place and our purpose.
Yeah, it sure can. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Steve McIntosh. He's author of Evolution's Purpose. It's an integral interpretation of the scientific story of our origins. And also there is great information about spirituality, or really positive, what I would say positive. I know we don't want to put a positive or negative spin on anything, but just they are values of beauty, truth, and goodness. In layperson's term, okay, you talk about our values, these beauty, truth, and goodness values. They exert kind of a magnetic or like a gravitational pull on the evolution of consciousness and our culture as human beings. How does this happen?
Sure. Well, it begins really with the emergence of life itself. The main thing that distinguishes life from non-life is, as the famous late biologist Lynn Margulis said, life is matter that chooses. You know, life has intentionality.
Yes.
Even the most primitive amoebas will swim up a glucose gradient toward food or swim away from some toxic substance. You know, even though their purposes, if you will, are highly instinctual and genetically pre-programmed, they're still spontaneous evaluative systems, as Stuart Kaufman has called them.
Yeah.
These and life, this emergence of purpose within life, this intentionality, is seen through a primitive form of value recognition. In other words, survival value is what all life strives for.
Right.
And life, as life as life grows more complex and organisms become more accomplished in what they can do, the what it means for animal well-being becomes more well-defined to include nurturing offspring and companionship and pleasure. And then, just as the thing that distinguishes life from non-life is a first-order kind of a purpose, the thing, the main thing that distinguishes humans from other animals is a kind of a second-order purpose, that there's an emergence of freedom, which gives us free will, which is really kind of the organ of perception of higher values. We can begin to see ourselves from outside of ourselves, and this awakens us to new problem situations. So human, I mean, animal needs can be solved relatively, but human needs can never be solved, because as soon as we solve one set of problems, we awaken to a new problem set and a new way that things can be made better. So the beautiful, the true, and the good is, in a sense, each stage of human culture, you know, tribal, traditional, modernist, as these stages are understood through integral philosophy, has its own octave, if you will, of beauty, truth, and goodness, its own conception of how to make the world a better place within its time in history. And so that conception of how to make things better acts as a kind of gravity that works on the inside by attracting consciousness to higher states and stages, right? That we know that there's an ever-widening way that we can fulfill our needs, and as we grow spiritually, as we grow culturally, as our consciousness evolves, we move from the negative motivations of fear and the avoidance of pain to higher motivations toward the aesthetic, the rational, and the moral. And these aspirations to make the world a better place, they continue to become more refined and more inclusive, you know, as values themselves evolve, right? What's good evolves, for example, from those worthy of moral consideration. As the circle widens, we notice that we're, you know, more and more people are worthy of moral consideration. We go from egocentric to ethnocentric to world-centric, and our conceptions of morality and, you know, truth and beauty have evolved in similar ways.
Right, and they sure have. Please don't write me and say I'm anti-religious, listeners, here on LA Talk Radio on the couch with Dr. Michelle. You know how I feel, many of you regulars out there listening. You know I'm more of a spiritual person. Well, you can go ahead and write me. I invite you. That's fine. I would just like you to, you know, pick up this book, because it really makes a lot of sense, actually, to me. And I think it will to you. It's called Evolution's Purpose. Steve McIntosh is the author. It's an interpretation of the scientific story of our origins, you know, evolution. But it has a more of a philosophical argument within it. You know, so let's talk about some of the self-destructive tendencies. You know, we're supposedly trying to move towards possibly beauty, truth, goodness. These are the great attractors of evolutionary development. What is the biggest threat to humanity in the world right now, Steve?
Well, I think on the outside, it's probably climate change. You know, I mean, you know, straightforwardly, climate change is real. The science of it is real. You know, it's natural that we go through a period of denial or where we sort of resist the implications of it, which we're in now culturally. But many of the reasons that are keeping us from forming the political will to do something significant about climate change are explained, and we can understand them with new clarity through this perspective on the evolution of consciousness and culture. And that goes sort of to the heart of your question, which is, as we make things better, as we try to improve conditions, part of the opportunities for improvement are defined by what's wrong. So the efforts of improvement are kind of contained within them, a latent pathology. By trying to move away from the previous wrong, they create a kind of an opposite wrong. I like to describe it as a sailboat, you know, tacking against the wind, right? The sailboat can't sail directly. It has to sort of go back and forth. And that's the way cultural evolution proceeds when we understand this pattern within a larger historical context. And that way we can see how, for example, progressive culture and, and its, you know, its championing of sustainability and all the, the values of inclusiveness, you know, this is an evolutionary step forward, but because it's in antithesis to what came before, because it rejects the larger civilization in so many subtle and you know, not so subtle ways, it remains countercultural. It remains relatively impotent politically. Mm-hmm. So that's why we see global warming as a non-issue in the election going on right now, because it's totally identified with the counterculture.
Right.
And the counterculture is something that is threatening to the identity of the very people they need to persuade.
Right.
So
right.
you mentioned at the beginning this Institute for Cultural Evolution that I'm a part of. One of the things we're trying to do is build political will to combat climate change through this new understanding, this new philosophical technology, if you will, that understands the evolution of consciousness and culture. But when you understand the evolution of consciousness and culture, I just want to quickly add another major threat, right, besides the external threat of global warming is a kind of an internal threat of complacency or, the kind of the fancy term for it is ennui or despair, a kind of a giving up, a nihilism about how things can be made better. If, the idea of making the world a better place is seen as hopelessly, idealistic and naive.
Right.
And the idea that we just have to be cynical and just, accept what's wrong in a kind of, gruff existentialist way where we sort of are in despair or just in the permanent pessimistic, that's an even greater danger than climate change.
Yeah,
and so spirituality, it's a tonic for that disease, for that malady. And hopefully people can appreciate the beautiful, the true, and the good in ways that are not sugar-coated or idealistically naive, but have philosophical authority and power behind them because they're describing things that are real that people can see for themselves.
Wow. You talk about values of the beauty, truth, and goodness, and you describe them as great attractors of the evolutionary development. Do you have any theory about so-called vibrational states of these thoughts? And, we gather together enough people who have and embrace these concepts. Is this more powerful for other individuals? Do these values spread to other individuals? Just like you said, if you tell people that there's going to be a great, wonderful change coming on December 21st, they'll believe it. So if more people embrace these feelings and show them, demonstrate them in action in the world, will people, be more open to, doing this themselves, and it will spread the positive thoughts?
Sure. I mean, the cultural evolution occurs through agreement, right? In other words, the agreement structures are, they're not perfectly objective, but they're not just subjective either. They're not just in my head, because what makes an agreement real is you and I are connecting around an idea or a proposition.
Sure.
And agreements are like the cells of the cultural organism. So the more we can build a particular agreement around an important particular value or goal, the more we'll evolve the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there may certainly well be, theories of subtle energy or morphic fields or, inner vibrational patterns within culture involved, but we don't even have to address those. We can see in a straightforward way that we want to build cultural evolution by building agreement around new truths and new ideals of morality. So doing that partially involves there's a kind of a push and a pull, right? The pull is the way we can imagine how things can be better, right? The transcendent potential for a better way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this has to relate to problems on the ground, like what's wrong, what threatens, what are our immediate needs.
Mm-hmm.
To get this traction going, to get this internal pull of higher values connected to ways that can make the culture better, it has to connect to real problems that people have.
Yes.
I mean, for years, this integral philosophy movement has had a kind of a solution to a problem that people don't know they have, right?
Right,
they want to
exactly.
evolve people's consciousness, but they don't know that their consciousness needs to evolve.
Sure.
So that's one of the ways we're focusing on problems like climate change, like nuclear proliferation, like globalization without any kind of democratic oversight.
Right.
I mean, we're pro-modern in many ways, but we also recognize that modernism in its current form is unsustainable, and that the counterculture isn't doing the right job politically to try to moderate it without vanquishing it. Right?
Yeah.
We want to be in the synthesis that harmonizes the thesis and the antithesis, if you'll allow me to use those terms.
Go ahead.
Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. Yeah, that's the pattern of evolution. That's the law of change, first recognized by Hegel, 200 years ago.
That's right.
And we can see it more clearly than ever before once we understand this internal dimension of evolution, which we recognize as consciousness and culture.
Yeah, with the yin and the yang, though, there's so many, there's different opposing philosophies of human beings, of course, and belief systems. How do we incorporate some of these new truths about evolution's purposes to, how do we cope with some of the so-called terror groups, certain people who don't believe that we deserve to live because we don't think the way they do? How do we cope with this kind of destruction in our world?
Sure. Well, obviously, we have to defend ourselves. We have to be stalwart in preventing terrorists from destroying our civilization, as I think the federal government is doing in the United States, although, you know, it's a continuous battle.
Yes,
and there'll
it
be
is.
Losses and gains in that
yeah.
battle.
Yeah.
I think the long-term solution, of course, is the evolution of culture. So the evolution of the forms of culture that are creating extremism and terrorism, that's a long-term proposition, but it's something that can be done if we understand how we can recapitulate the events of history, right? Mm-hmm. That what led to the Europeans evolving from a kind of a feudal society to
right.
a democratic society in a sustainable way,
yeah.
that a lot of that had to do with values.
Yeah.
It had a lot to do with stages of consciousness.
Yeah.
We could see, for example, in Japan, have their own homegrown form of modernism because their traditional form of consciousness and culture, you know, Japanese solidarity
yes.
is so well developed
yes,
that
it
naturally creates a platform for its own transcendence.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
making you know, for example, the Islamic civilization more healthy on its own terms, really,
mm-hmm.
you know, bringing out the beauty and the truth and the goodness that's already there within their traditional form of consciousness and culture is one of the ways of making it healthy. And of course, the conflict between modernism and traditionalism that is naturally part of the cultural structure,
mm-hmm, sure.
you know, that can be used for both good and bad. So
mm-hmm.
working with the Islamic world to strengthen its institutions and helping it create, you know, a reformation, if
yeah.
you will, before
yeah.
it can have an enlightenment, how it can, you know, we can recapitulate what happened in the development of freedom and democracy and prosperity in the West. I think that's something that many Islamists want.
Yes, I do too.
Maybe not the hardcore fundamentalists.
Well,
again, there's
right.
no argument that's going to persuade a fundamentalist, no matter where you find them. But the larger populations can see how to improve their conditions, and you know, freedom and prosperity is certainly one of the ways that can happen, and that requires a degree of modernist culture. But to have homegrown modernism, we can't just transplant it or, you know, sort of impose it from the
right,
top.
Right,
it has
exactly.
to grow from within. And again, our understanding of values and consciousness there can be extremely helpful in making that world more successful in its evolution.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can only be hopeful. And don't you think that maybe the Islamic radicalists keep us, we who are more open-minded, and are moving on culturally, spiritually, don't you think it keeps us in check as well? That's what you were talking about, the balances, you know, of the human existence.
Right. And yes. in other words, another expression of this dialectical pattern I
yeah.
mentioned is what's known as transcendence and
mm-hmm.
inclusion.
Yeah.
Right. In other
yeah,
words,
yeah.
we want to transcend what's wrong, but we can't just sort of transcend without including, bringing along that which came before, you know, including the mm-hmm. best of the achievements, right? Our bodies work by making, you know, the achievements of every level of evolution work within us, the achievements of the emergence of the vertebrate, the
mm-hmm.
emergence of the neuron,
yeah.
the emergence
yeah.
of these biological structures which
yep.
we're depending on, right? These were evolutionary accomplishments along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the cultural works the same way. In other words, the culture of traditionalism, when it's functioning properly, gives us values like decency, honesty, modesty, respect for legal authority. You know, if those things are absent, if there's no sense of fair play, then any attempt to build a higher level of civilization collapses in corruption. This is what Jefferson saw, really.
Right.
He called it public virtue, right?
Right,
public
right, right.
virtue is required for a functional democracy.
Yep, it is.
And public virtue partially
mm-hmm.
depends upon a functional form of traditional consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So when the traditional consciousness, you know, when we fail to include that, when we just want to transcend it or vanquish it or think that there's nothing from these older structures that need to be preserved in our
mm-hmm.
current culture,
yeah.
then we destabilize the entire structure of evolution that we depend on.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
seeing things in this evolutionary way that ideally, to have a healthy society, you need to have transcendence and inclusion,
mm-hmm.
and either too much inclusion
yeah.
or too much transcendence destabilizes the evolutionary structure.
Is that true? In your studies, Steve, in your philosophy, your work, all the work you've done, and in the sciences, where is a higher power? Where is the God around us, if you want to use that term?
Where sure. Well, I describe myself as a panentheist, right?
Okay.
Which recognizes spirit as both you know, internal at the center of all things and
mm-hmm.
and external in a transcendent way.
Okay.
I think both are consistent. My theology or my spiritual convictions
sure.
are not a big part of the philosophy that I'm arguing for in the book because
okay.
I want the philosophy to be inclusive of as many different spiritual perspectives
sure.
as possible.
Sure.
Right? You know, spiritual pluralism is a major evolutionary achievement. We want to preserve that
mm-hmm.
without just falling into kind of an anything goes relative. collectivism. We want to have both. We want to have a, you know, the standards of excellence and, you know, inclusion. We want to transcend and include, as I said.
Right.
So where does God fit in? I think that God fits in as the source and destiny of this process of evolution. Again, this is my personal conviction, but I would say that in this, another way to describe it is this, the presence of the infinite. You know, the infinite, that which was before the Big Bang, continues to permeate the universe, and we see it in the forms of unity, which we describe as the beautiful, the true, and the good. And so understanding it, whether you have a theistic conception or a more impersonal, non-dual conception, recognizing that the infinite is all around us, and that by bringing the infinite more into the finite, you know, in the most abstract way we can think about it, philosophically, you know, that reaches all the way down to the ground in terms of making the world a better place through these concepts of beauty, truth, and goodness. And that's why these values are a cornerstone of my philosophy of evolution, because they connect the ultimate, right, the infinite, you know, God, to, you know, our bodies, to our culture, to, you know, the times that we're living in historically. All of these things relate to us as agents of evolution trying to make the world a little bit more perfect, and thereby bringing the infinite a little bit more back into the finite.
Oh, is that true? And the creation of, you know, according to the Big Bang Theory, which you talk about in your book, Evolution's Purpose, the Big Bang Theory possibly created many other universes, many other planets who house other beings. Right? Does that include that as well?
Certainly. I mean, it's highly likely that we are not the only planet where there is life, and where there is life, there's the evolution of life and the sequence of emergences that have, you know, created us.
Yep.
So I certainly believe that that human beings or something very close to the consciousness of human beings is widely spread throughout the universe, and that the purpose of evolution is for similar life worlds like ours to grow toward making things more perfect, you know, here on these planets. And if your belief system or your spiritual convictions allows for the concept of an afterlife, then you can conceive of the evolution of consciousness continuing beyond this world, beyond this life, into untold adventure of you know, this evolutionary task we're on of perfecting the universe, that can go on beyond our time in these physical bodies.
Fascinating stuff. We're just about out of time, Steve, but I want to have you tell listeners where they can get a hold of your book or find out more about you. And
Of course, Amazon.com is a central place to buy books and a good place to write a review, good or bad, to give the book some attention. you can just type in Evolution's Purpose on Amazon. But, of course, the headquarters for my work is on my website, which is SteveMacIntosh.com. And that includes excerpts from the book. You can buy the book there with free shipping, but you can also see videos, and there's a wide collection of audio interviews and a blog and lots of information about how my work connects to this larger integral philosophy movement that my thinking is a part of.
Right. It's great. All right. And that's going to be up here in the archives after tomorrow. And if you want more information, everybody, you can download or replay the show and hear everything that Steve had to say once again if you've joined us later. And also I'll have the information on how to get the book and contact Steve as well and learn more about him if you like. Thank you so much for being such a great guest, Steve. You've really challenged me to be in the here and now and really work hard today because you're
thanks,
such
Michelle.
An intellect.
You're at a certain amount of work. It's the practice of truth.
Well, there you go. There you go. Again, Steve MacIntosh, and it's MacIntosh, by the way, if you want to Google him.
MacIntosh.
Sorry about that. Yeah,
no
I
problem.
Do have it right in front of my eyes here in the book. He's a leader in the integral philosophy movement, founding partner of the think tank, the New Social Policy Foundation. Thanks so much again, and let's keep spreading the good word to everybody
Thanks,
out
Michelle.
There.
Thanks, Michelle. It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed being with you today.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a lovely day. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right, folks, it is all about beauty, truth, and goodness, don't you know? Beauty, truth, and goodness. Hey, I want to welcome my new sponsor, the company who, you know, really brings you wonderful things, especially if you're looking for that special someone. My single listeners out there, listen, let me ask you something. How many of you are tired of online dating? Yeah, right? I want to introduce a new dating service that brings online dating to a reality. E esocialcalendar.com, esocialcalendar.com. You can finally find that special someone with whom you have true interests in common. There are lots of events and activities, and they range from mixers to sporting events to outdoor adventures and much, much more. It's all in a group setting, which is much more comfortable and relaxed. I can't believe somebody found the way to take the mystery out of online dating and take the pressure out of your first date as well. If you've been online, different services, searching for that special someone, not had any luck, this might be the key. Membership is 100% free, so go now to esocialcalendar.com and sign up right now for free. All right, thank you so much, everybody, for joining me today. This show has gone way, way fast. The book, by the way, we're talking about is Evolution's Purpose, Steve McIntosh. It's an interpretation of the scientific story of our origins. if you are a fundamental religion person, it really is not contradicting what you believe. It comes from a more spiritual point of view, but also incorporates science and physics. So it's not anti-religion. It's very open to, you know, the wonderful concepts, the values of beauty, truth, and goodness, which are the great attractors of evolutionary development. And they sort of harmonize with scientific truth. And this is what we're finding out as well in physics today. You know, it's a great read. You really have to focus. But there are so many people who really have endorsed this book, by the way. So if you're interested in this kind of thing, you might do it. You know, Dr. Irvin Laszlo, he's president of the Club of Budapest. He's an author of more than 30 books on evolution. Of course, Andrew Cohen, who I've had on the show before, he's the author of Evolutionary Enlightenment. He highly recommends this book. Of course, Marianne Williamson, our own Course in Miracles lady. And she's written Return to Love. And that's what it's all about here. That's what we're trying to talk about, are the good things, the positive things, and how we can think more positively and help our world to become a better place to live in, as well as help ourselves. And it really starts, as I always say, within ourselves. And that's the way it is. All right. This is Dr. Michelle, and I've had a really great time with you today. Thank you so much for joining me. If you'd like to comment or have any questions about today's show, you can now contact me at docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. docmichelle@AOL.com. As I always say, do take care of yourself first. See, then you will be better for others. That's the way it works. Be back next week. More great information for you. Another wonderful interview. Take care now. Bye-bye. Just the same.